and welcome to another episode of Wisdom Chat. And my guest today is Russell Hamblin-Boone, who is the CEO of the Civil Enforcement Association. Russell, thank you so much for giving your time to be my guest on the podcast today.
Hi, Phil.
I know, Russell, that you and I have known each other for quite a number of years, sort of on and off, and I've really appreciated that. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about the Civil Enforcement Association so they know who it is and who it represents and what it's about?
Sure. So it's a membership organisation. So I represent the companies that conduct civil enforcement. They're civil enforcement agents, are commonly known as bailiffs. Their official title now is enforcement agents, and they collect outstanding debt, taxes and fines on behalf of local authorities. So that might be parking fines, it might be overdue council tax, it might be court fines, and the role that I play is to act as a spokesman for the industry, and also to help work with other people to reform and continue to drive up standards in the industry.
Well, thank you very much, Russell. I know when people hear the term CIVIA, they often perhaps don't realise who it is and what they're referring to. But when you talk about things like, the enforcement of council tax and things like that, immediately people are starting to think, oh, right. And I suppose, if I may, looking at your sort of journey to where you are today as the CEO of the Civil Enforcement Association, it's been interesting that the bodies you've been part of, the Finance and Leasing Association, the Consumer Finance Association, all of which, and now the Civil Enforcement Association, all of which have certainly had a degree of attention in the media over the years, and for all manner of reasons. And yet, you knowing you and your sort of principles, you found yourself on this journey working with these organisations and, I suppose, influencing them and influencing how people view them. I mean, what's been your sort of motivation behind that? What's driven you in a sense?
Yeah, I think the term people use is issues rich, because I've worked in the retail sector, the energy sector, as you said, finance, the payday loan sector, and now working for the bailiffs. So I've never really fallen into jobs that where people have been popular. But having said that, I quite like the challenge of perhaps disarming people by not being the face that they expect to see when they think of a payday lender or a bailiff or whatever. Yeah. And so perhaps there's some advantage in that. But I also think I've been fortunate to be able to go into jobs at a time when there's been a need for change or reform. And to, for businesses to represent themselves, do some reputational management, all of which are things that I'm involved in doing and can walk away from those jobs when the tasks are completed. I'm probably the archetypal turkey voting for Christmas. The more successful I am, the least I'm needed. But at least I can look back and say, I took that industry on a journey from here to here, and it's in a better place as a result. Whether that's a level playing field for sort of from a commercial market point of view, in terms of outcome for its customers or clients or whatever, and better for the people working in those businesses because their jobs are more fulfilled because they're doing a better job. According to their convictions and their business models.
Yeah, I can certainly vouch for what you're saying there, because having known you over the years, and sometimes there's been quite difficult periods, and yet you've been quite a solid and reasoned voice in the midst of this. So I think of, for example, payday loans. You know, you didn't just stand there and let people sort of just say whatever they wanted to say, because emotions were running high in terms of people's views and opinions about the payday industry. And yes, there were practices, but also at the same time, there were people like yourself working behind the scenes to create good standards and good practice. And it needs people like yourself doing that. And having seen that firsthand myself, and sometimes the conversations you and I have had in the past, you know, we've talked about some of these things. And I think when I think of our listeners, and certainly some of our listeners, they may have had experience of, for example, the payday lenders, or the you know, sort of the financing industry, or even concerned right now about if I'm in sort of financial difficulty. We're in at this moment in time, our society, in a very very strong climate of change and uncertainty, especially financially. You know, living costs are rising rapidly, and yet wages are not rising necessarily to meet that. So people are concerned about the future and may possibly wonder, how am I going to keep my home? You know, how am I going to manage during this time? And I remember for myself many, many years ago, when I found myself out of work and in an indebted situation, first thing that came to mind was, how am I going to keep my home? And fearful that I was going to lose it. Now, I didn't know what I didn't know. So I assumed this is what would happen. And yet there are lots of other things that go on, and there are lots of things that we as individuals can do to actually prevent those outcomes happening in many cases. In your looking at from the other side of the fence, what would your advice be to some of these people who are a little concerned, and particularly when we talk about things like council tax, and we can I suppose tackle parking fines a little bit separate, because there's other things going on there, but certainly in terms of local authorities and civil court fines and things like this, and people are wanting perhaps to do the right thing, what kind of advice would you sort of give to them if they're concerned or struggling?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing to say is that to a degree, and without overemphasizing, I can sympathize a bit and empathize even. You know, I was unemployed several years ago, and so I was in that, thrown into that sort of unemployed status, trying to work out what benefits I was entitled to, how to sign on, sort of being processed through the job centre. And I found it quite difficult because I didn't feel that I fitted the model of the of people that they were normally seeing going through the job centre, particularly, yeah. You know, in our area where it was sort of long-term unemployed at the time and things like that. And I think that as we come out of the pandemic, and some people have had some financial shocks, and people have been made redundant who were out of work now for the first time, it's a very alien environment, because it's kind of not designed for people who are secure, who've had good salaries, who you know, can probably under any other circumstances manage their way through sort of crisis in their life and things like that. This is something that's alien to everybody. And as we look at, you know, although it's not officially a recession, we're seeing lots of indicators that suggest we should be in some sort of recession status. Only the fact that employment seems to be quite high, that's probably the only difference, but high prices, inflation, yeah, all of those type of things can give people cause to feel overwhelmed by it all. I think the first thing to say is that you're not alone, there will be lots of people feeling exactly the same way who've been through that experience and come out the other side. And the second thing to say is that acknowledging that and recognizing the things that you have control of and the things that you don't have control of, and only concern yourself with those things that you can control, because the things that are outside your control are not worth your stress and worry. And the things that you can control are things like debt advice. You can talk to people, you can look at forums, you can go online, and it doesn't necessarily, you don't have to be deep in debt in order to talk to somebody and say, look, I'm a bit worried about, you know, which is the right bill to pay and what are the consequences if I don't pay my electricity bill or my mortgage or whatever. Because what you'll find is that those debt advisors are most likely to say, do you know, if you talk to the people that you owe that money to, they will be a lot more helpful to you than you realize. Their objective is to help you get out of any debt. It's not to get as much debt out of you as possible. And I think that that's been a change which, you know, you will have observed, Phil, and I have in my career, probably especially since the credit crunch of sort of 2008, 2009, society changed and suddenly we weren't stigmatizing people being in debt. We were starting to understand that it wasn't necessarily any fault of their own, and that there could be many people who end up in those situations for lots of different reasons. And actually, those people were able to help themselves if they were given a little bit of help and a little bit of incentive to get them going. So, you know, acknowledging your debt, realizing that there are some things that you can control, and that there is expert advice available to make sure that what you're doing is the right thing, and you've got your priorities right. And the final thing is and recognizing that creditors want to help you. They don't want to create more debt for you. That's not a good outcome for them, and it's not a good outcome for you either in the long term or the short term. So by speaking to those creditors, rather than thinking if I speak to them they're going to know that I'm in debt and they're going to chase me even harder, actually speaking to them is probably going to take away a lot of the worries that you have initially.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that, Russell. I know from my work in the money and debt advice industry that it wouldn't be unusual to hear of people waiting 3+ years before actually acknowledging and asking for help and assistance. And usually that waiting period actually just makes matters worse. So the sooner people ask for help, the better. And also there are set processes that are gone through before somebody finds themselves in that place where perhaps they might lose their house, or perhaps they might, you know, find themselves in court for whatever reason. And if there's a desire to want to do the right thing, it's better to acknowledge and seek help sooner, because then you are doing the right thing, and it's likely those consequences won't be anything like what you're perceiving in your mind. And that was the very thing that came across oftentimes with the people we were working with, but also in my work now. There are times when you can tell somebody's just feeling a bit uncomfortable, not because we're talking about money, but because we're covering a subject that has actually been on their mind for quite some time, where they're not quite sure how to deal with it. And I think when you're talking about things like council tax, yes, we've had in the news, you know, certain approaches, and people like yourself are wanting to bring about, you know, standards in an industry that are recognised, accepted, and they're good practices that do exactly what you were saying, and that's helping people to get to the right place rather than exacerbate their circumstances further.
And you know, with council tax, ultimately there is there's the threat of imprisonment or taking your goods away. But the reality is that nobody wants to do that. Everybody wants to get you in a position where you're able to pay your taxes on a sustainable basis. So You know, and the people at local authorities will be just like you, and they've got their council tax to pay, and they've got their debts to pay, and you know, they're as empathetic of your situation. And it's important that as part of our sort of social justice system, we have sort of penalties and we have enforcement for people, you know, otherwise no one would pay their taxes or their fines or whatever, and there'd be no, you know, no sort of punitive side to it. But that's not the purpose of enforcement. The purpose of enforcement is to use, when we get to a certain point with certain individuals, to use the judicial process in order to get those people to comply. The majority of people, you know, missing payments or whatever, will be able to resolve that situation by talking to the council, whether that's extending the payment period, for example, or coming to some sort of repayment arrangement. And I think it's really important to recognise that enforcement is only there for a certain group of people, as a, you know, as the mechanism that the government has, which, for example, you know, consumer credit firms work, they can charge interest, for example, yeah. Or they can price against risk. Council tax is, you know, everybody pays it. Local authorities have an obligation to collect it. And what we have to do is make sure we've got some mechanisms in place to make sure that the majority of people are paying that, because that money is the money that goes to help people when they're in vulnerable circumstances. In many cases, that 60% of a local authority's bill is about, you know, adult support services or child support services and helping vulnerable people. So that's really important.
And also, the sooner people ask for help, that's not to stigmatise them in any way. But certainly in those situations, it may well be that they can get some kind of support for things like council tax.
Another point, sorry to interrupt, Bill, an important point is that some people kind of say, oh, it's a bit medieval to have bailiffs visiting people's homes, or enforcement agents, as they're now called. But I remember it was shadowing an enforcement agent actually in Swansea. And we visited someone's home, and you could tell by, you know, the garden and things like that, that this was, you know, someone who was struggling. When we visited that person, and I won't go into the detail, but we're able to talk through face to face her circumstances and the problems she was having, and in a way that you couldn't have done by telephone or, you know, web chat or whatever, because she'd buried her head in the sand until she was actually confronted with her problems with an enforcement agent on the doorstep, talking through all of the things that we could do to help her. You could see the weight lifting off her when she started to understand that actually it wasn't as bad as it appeared by all of the letters and reminders and everything else that was getting on top of her. Once you kind of filtered that out, the kind of stuff that, you know, Phil used to work for Christians Against Poverty, they used to do, take people's, you know, bags full of bills and reminders and whatever, and sort through it. Enforcement agents on a smaller scale do that with people as well. And, you know, that's the point at which actually it's a really valuable resource to have people actually visiting people in their homes, particularly when you can identify those vulnerable people who've just simply disengaged with any other form of communication. And provide, you know, you can then offer them that reassurance, rather than being the, you know, the guy banging on the door wanting to sort of take away your goods. You're actually the guy banging on the door saying, I really want to help you, and I can help you out of this situation, and I can explain, I can put things in perspective for you.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to what we were saying earlier about, you know, people not really understanding the situation. What tends to happen then, it becomes very emotional, emotive. People then can catastrophize, and therefore the image that they paint in their minds, as we say, it's the map is not the world is a term that's often used, and the map is what you form in your mind, yet the reality can be very different, especially if you sort of reach out and ask for help. Somebody can actually put perspective back into the situation, and oftentimes it's that alleviating that stress and anxiety there. And I know, you know, my time working, for example, Christians Against Poverty, seeing and hearing the stories of people who had, yeah, in a way, kind of buried their head in the sand. But they did it because they were fearful, they were frightened, and they really didn't know which way to turn. And I think the more we can sort of let people know there are places you can go and people you can turn to, and yes, you're right, I would say as well, the whole industry and the whole sort of finance area has changed immensely, because rather than some of the hard approaches, the non-empathetic, the non-compassionate approaches that we had seen many, many years ago, we're seeing a lot more of people wanting to work, you know, creditors wanting to work with people and say, look, we don't want to exacerbate the situation. We want to help you through this process and help you do the right thing where that's feasible. And if anybody is concerned, I would say to our listeners, do seek debt advice. And there's nothing wrong in doing that. And you can get the information if you go onto the Money and Pension Services website. You can get the information of where you can get help in your particular area. And there are different organisations who approach that help in different ways. Like your Christians Against Poverty, like Step Change, like Citizens Advice Bureau and National Debt Line. So there's a lot of help out there that people can tap into. You know, Russell, I'm just thinking in terms of the point you made earlier about payday lending. You mentioned just before we came on air about the report that the Centre for Social Justice had just recently launched regarding how many people are now accessing loan sharks,
yeah,
or getting caught up in that. And I remember it was on the news just the other day, and a lady was being interviewed, and they said, so how do you manage to get out of this? And she said, it's very hard. It's almost impossible to get out. And that's the essence of loan sharks, is they want to tie you in so you can't get out of it. But we, you know, I remember that day with the payday lending industry and a lot of the arguments going on. And I think one of the points you made, it was almost like we were so focused on that, but we never paid attention to, well, what are the repercussions if we can't tidy this up so it works well, what are some of the repercussions for those who still want to access some form of finance? And yeah, we're now seeing that, aren't we, in the loan sharks. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I remember back in that time, there was a Times headline calling me a worryingly effective lobbyist, which was a backhanded compliment. I took it as a backhanded compliment, but I think what they're actually saying is the industry needs to not be so good at telling the story that it's telling through the trade association I was running at the time. But actually, that was, again, letting emotion get in the way. And also making kind of middle class value judgments about the sort of people who were using high cost credit. Sort of people who were using high cost credit were using it because they didn't have any other legitimate alternative. And when we took that away and threw the baby out with the bathwater, we only left people with illegitimate alternatives, which are the loan sharks. And actually, you know, there are lots of, you know, sort of different views about the sort of payday lending market, the way it approached the sort of the UK finance sector was probably not quite the appropriate way to do it. But the things within it, the technology that's still used now by legitimate lenders, was innovative and pioneering at the time. The recognition that, you know, you don't have to have the highest credit score in order to be able to access financial services products was a really important point to recognize. And somewhere along the way, we focused too much on banning something without saying, actually, before we ban it, are there some things that we can cherry pick from it to make sure that we've got something better for people who do have thin credit files and aren't able to access normal credit facilities for whatever reason, and make sure that we've given them some financial service provision so that they don't fall into the arms of loan sharks. And loan sharks is almost like a cartoon, you know, a bit like when you think about bailiffs, I suppose. It's almost, you know, people have a preconception and it's almost a cartoon thing. And having been involved with the illegal money lending team and seen the work that they do, it is an evil, evil thing, loan sharking, that is, you know, coercive and controlling and violent and intimidating. There, it's, you know, it, people in the grip of loan sharks, you know, I don't know, if, you know, there's some awful things going on in the world, but this goes alongside it, alongside human trafficking and things like that. Really, really, it's a vile thing. And we should really never have allowed this situation that's arisen where, you know, according to the report this week, you know, a million people in some way owing to these horrible people who are using all sorts of the kind of levers and blackmail and things like that that anybody would just, you know, be horrified by.
As you're talking now, it's having this recollection of my time sort of visiting some families in certain neighbourhoods where I would actually see a vehicle driving around slowly with blackened out windows. And I said to somebody one day, oh, who are they? I've seen them a few times. And they said, oh, they're the moneylenders. We try not to have anything to do with them. Mm. And there's a real palpable fear there. And I think, you know, time is passed us by, but I'd just like to leave our listeners with a thought of, look, if you're considering using a loan shark, please don't. Yeah. Think carefully first. Ask for help. It's okay to ask for help. Nobody's going to judge you. Nobody's going to condemn you. People are empathetic. They will work with you, and they will give you the right kind of advice to get the right kind of help to help you through your circumstances without going down that route. And if you are somebody who's accessed a loan shark already, then again, don't hesitate to ask for help. There are people around who will help and support you. These people rely on threats oftentimes and fear. And so it's easy to believe what they're saying, but there are people who are working to make sure that you're kept safe and that your financial situation is dealt with in the best way possible. So don't hesitate to ask for help. And sorry, Rush, you were going to say...
I was going to say, and be wary, especially online, of people befriending you. Yeah. Because, you know, that's... loan sharks befriend you first, and then they turn. Yeah. It's not, you know, you're not going to recognise a loan shark until you're in the grip of a loan shark.
Yeah, that's it. That's a really good point. Russell, thank you so much for giving of your time. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. I hope our listeners have got something out of it. And in some respects, you know, a degree of encouragement and hope, because there are ways forward. There's always a way forward. And there are many, like you say, right at the beginning, you're not on your own. And people do understand. And people are wanting to help wherever possible. So,
These are challenging times, and there are lots of, you know, we don't have a lot of the answers to many of the things that are going on, but there's a lot of people experiencing things at the moment, and we take comfort in the fact that, you know, we're all in it together.
Yes. Thank you so much, Russell. I really appreciate your time. And to our listeners, if you want to know any more or you have any questions, please don't hesitate to go on to the aurumgoldltd.co.uk website. You can put questions in there on the contact page. I will follow it up, and if I need to pass you on to various people, or even if you want to just send Russell a question, and by all means do so, and we'll sort it out for you. But thank you so much, Russell, and here's the end of this episode of Wisdom Chat.